sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex. Hey, you guys, it's Judy. Patricia is back this week, sort of a break from the break. She is having a conversation on Facebook Live, and I wanted you guys to know about it, maybe hear a little bit more about it before you dove in. And the Facebook Live event is happening Monday, December 30th. It's happening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It is in her secret group for women, and so it is a women-only chat this particular time. So the podcast is for everyone, and you can listen and gain some insight and some resources and some understanding. So enjoy. If you are listening to this after the 30th and want to be a part of it, check out all the information, go to the group for women, and you should be able to find that post after the fact. So we're going to dive in with Patricia, and here we go.
All right. Well, let's dive in.
Oh, dive in, huh? Diving in. Well, you're going to get wet, so you might as well have a swimsuit on if we're going to dive in.
That's true.
Or skinny dip, since we're talking about squirting today.
So. Yes, squirting. This inspired by a class you're having on the 30th. So.
Yeah. I have a Facebook group, and this time is specifically for women, and it's geared towards just education around it. A lot of people are very curious about what it actually is. They've heard about it. Maybe their partner has asked them if they've ever squirted, or they're trying to get them to squirt or something. Some women just really are totally foreign to the concept or how it can happen or why it would happen. And there's also a lot of shame and stuff around it from society and things. So this class is, again, just for women. It's in a Facebook group that I have called The Secret Group for Women Only. ! And, you know, if you find me on Facebook, or I guess you could put a link to it on the Sex Matters page on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the group.
Yes.
You can ask to join, and I will automatically invite you as long as you're female. The male version of this is actually more of the technique, and that will be taught later. So that will be something to talk about. And that's called Kunyaza. And it's based out of a East African cultural fable story, you know, something along those lines that happened a really, really long time ago. But because of their culture and how close-knit they are with community and how the way information travels through their generations by sanghas, which are like aunts, you know, like aunts, they say aunts in Minnesota, aunties or whatever.
Yep.
The sanghas are given the important job of teaching females the art of pleasure. And because of this, Rwanda, the country of Rwanda, this little tiny country, has a 90% rate of squirting of their female, which is a female ejaculate, is basically what it is. It's the female version of coming. A man comes and spews ejaculate. This is the idea of a woman coming and having ejaculate. So,
which some women, you know, there's the concept of being wet. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is
lubricant.
The lubricant. And then this is more of an intense
rush.
Amount, sort of that. Yeah. That rush that you're going to notice something different. I know women who have experienced it that didn't know what they were experienced it. They were like, I didn't think I had to pee, you know, so they're feeling that, but it's also not yellow, right? It can be whitish.
It can be white. It can be clear. It sometimes has some of the ingredients that are also found in pee. It is not pee. There's so much controversy going on around this, actually, which just blows my mind. It's still like a phenomenon with all the science and things that we have at our disposal nowadays. The G-spot is still not considered an actual part of the female anatomy. It's considered an area of interest. It's not technically a part of anatomical, you know, models and stuff or pictures in medical books and things. Mm-hmm. So let me back up a little bit and just talk about the idea of where this comes from. Because when you are so hyperstimulated, the idea of squirting is almost like an external expression of an orgasm versus the internal expression of an orgasm, which is the waves of energy or the feeling of an electrical pulse waving through your body or the huge tension and release inside your body. This is more of an external show of fireworks or whatever else, however you'd want to put it. And it comes in the form of a gush, and it's involuntary. When a woman gets that excited and is that relaxed and is that into what is going on, that she is able to just freely allow her body to take over, and this ejaculate is produced. Now, ejaculate is similar to a male ejaculate. So it's the white creamy stuff, or it can be clear or whatever. And it's very thick and viscousy. But the actual squirting is more of a liquid, and it comes from, dun dun dun, the G-spot, which is the female prostate. It's the tissue that you would find in a man that formulates his prostate. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, we all came from the same bundle of cells as embryos, you know, as that clump of cells that we started as before we became boy or girl. We all start with the same pocket of cells. And we'll just think about the idea that, you know, we have very similar sexual structures. They're just put together in different ways in our body. So for a man to have a prostate, women actually have the components of a prostate as well. And it's found behind the G-spot. That tissue that is lumped up in there, that's kind of rigid and kind of and swells and stuff, and that men can feel or women can feel when they insert fingers. Mm-hmm. That is the prostate. So when it's stimulated, and this is why men like their prostate stimulated as well. And in order to do that for a man, you have to enter through the anus. But for a woman, you just are massaging that on the inside of the vagina with the come hither kind of motion with a finger or two inserted.
And with the person on their back.
Right, right. And it's about 2 inches, 2.5 inches inside on the anterior or up towards the belly button part of the vagina. So by stimulating that area, that's not a guarantee that you're going to get them to squirt, but that's generally where the engorgement needs to happen. The blood flow needs to really, really be focused in that kind of area where there's been a lot of intense friction. Mm-hmm. So what I want to talk about the most on our podcast right here, though, is the idea of the shame behind it here, mm-hmm. in especially in the Western cultures here. And it's not just us, in Europe and Germany and some of the other countries that have been studying this phenomenon. They don't have a very high rate of women that have the ability to do this on a regular basis. And it's not a performance thing. It's not about performance anxiety. It's more about being allowed to ejaculate. Women feel like everything is supposed to be inside and held inside of them, and that things can be dirty if, you know, that it's considered dirty or messy or associated with a certain type of woman if you squirt. The first time it happened to me, I didn't know. I thought I peed the bed, just like you said. Mm-hmm. The first time that it happened, and I was mortified. And And my partner that I was with was just like, no, that's amazing. And he was so excited because it's the kind of orgasm that no woman can fake.
Mm-hmm.
There is no faking squirting. When it happens and you know, it's not something that you can just, that he knows he's done a good job. We'll just put it that way. So, in my experience, anybody that has gotten me to a place where I was able to squirt was very happy at the outcome. And I was the one who ended up having to wash the sheets. So what's the big deal? You know, it can be a little messy, but even in Rwanda, as part of their marital, like at their wedding, they get gifts of banana mats.
Oh,
banana fiber mats to put underneath them because it's expected that they will squirt.
That's so
crazy. Isn't that crazy?
It is. It is.
It's
wild,
so fun.
Actually, it's right? Really wow. Well, and I've always thought so. It's an interesting thing to have it be that just known, because, like you say, it's a wedding gift.
Yeah,
it's a wedding gift. So you are acknowledging. Like, I feel like in our culture, you know, there's the jokes, and then this is less now. But I'm thinking when I grew up, there's sort of the jokes about the honeymoon, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But no real like. Anything that would be suggestive of what might be happening is hidden. It's, yeah. You know, you don't talk about that, or it's very underplayed, or, you know, not in front of the children, or, you know, and I just mentioning this, I remember watching Yentl the first time, and there's the scene. Have you seen Yentl?
Yes.
Okay.
A long time ago.
There's
yes.
The scene where Yanchul and his bride are in their wedding suite, and they have to fake like the crazy sex throwing sheets up against, because it's like, oh my gosh, we're not going to have, you know, mm-hmm. what we need to show that we had sex. And I was just like, as a kid, I was slightly mortified in that. Like, oh my God, that's so like none of your business. Like, oh my God, how embarrassing that everybody know. But then I thought about it too, and the whole honeymoon. Everybody knows what's happening on your honeymoon. Like, it's just this sort of weird culture of hide it. But then everybody knows what you're doing because it's a honeymoon. So it's that weird dichotomy of, like you're saying, the shame, this thing that's supposed to be happening, but then there's so much shame, and it gets very confused in women's heads as to what we are allowed to be, what we're quote unquote supposed to be. So listening to this and thinking about this and the whole, in our culture, oh my gosh, you know, this would be an under table discussion.
Right.
About this, you know, which is changing. Thank
it
goodness.
It is changing, you know? For sure. But, you know, for a lot of women, this is something that they see as done by professionals, like it's only done in porno movies and
right.
things
it's
like that.
Right, it's not real.
Yeah. It's not real. Again, that it's dirty or it's just pee, and it is not. I think it's amazing that only men's ejaculation is celebrated in the United States, especially. Mm-hmm. That there is no, it's like we work at it and work at it and work at it until he comes. And we know that he comes because of his ejaculate. Mm-hmm. And there also is internal orgasms that they can have as well for men. And you can sense those and see those, and that are more like what a woman experiences when they have the internal orgasm. Mm-hmm. But why is it deemed dirty? Why shouldn't women have so much sexual enjoyment that they're able to let go in the throes of pleasure? Mm-hmm. Why is that just for men, you know? Right. And so I'm just kind of going down some of the notes of my from my Facebook post. And in here, I put that the Rwandans, they refer to us as the whites. The whites refer to our WASP, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, that were very prudish and were too uptight to give their men the satisfaction of driving us wild. How about that?
Oh, that's so fascinating. Oh,
isn't
my
that
gosh.
Amazing?
Well, it makes me think. So when I think about that, Another thought that comes to mind is thinking of convents and how many stories you hear about what goes on behind the walls of the convent.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for the women, for the nuns, it makes me curious to wonder, do nuns squirt more than the average woman? I mean, they also have to hide it and they have a lot of secrecy there too, but I'd be curious to know.
Yeah. Well, they've got lots of robes and stuff to absorb the water.
Exactly, so, right? Yeah.
Well, here, I'll tell you the little story. This is the little backstory to how the culture became so squirt positive. Okay. The queen of Rwanda at the time was getting bored and she was in need of a little excitement. And she called her security guard over and said, "You have to come and pleasure me." The king was off in battle. Okay. The guard was petrified because he's like, "Oh my God, I have to make love to the queen. And if the king finds out, he'll behead me." So he takes out his organ and he can't penetrate her because he's trembling and shaking so much. He keeps knocking against her instead of going in. So he keeps tapping on her clitoris with his penis. Mm-hmm. And he's shaking so bad that he's causing friction, right? He's trembling and shaking and he keeps knocking against her instead of going in. And she finds it so exciting that she actually ejaculates. In Rwanda, they have the pleasure of the technique called kunyaza. I almost said kwanza because
it's a little different.
Where they bring women to pleasure by making the woman ejaculate. It's that important for them, which I had no idea about. And thank you to Habib Akandi for telling this story. And this is from a storyteller who is a Kama Sutra expert. So I've been studying this book. It's called Kunyaza, and it's The Secret to Female Pleasure. And it was written by a man called Habib Akandi. And there are just incredible, incredible insights in this book about the fact that the knowledge of sexuality and sexual techniques is so much more cultural than instinctive. Cultures less sexually repressive than our own Western culture celebrate the existence of female orgasm and teach their members methods of achieving pleasure. In such cultures, female orgasm is expected. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's so fascinating when we think about that. So I am literally just looking up a movie to make sure that I'm going to say the right movie correctly.
Sacred Water.
But that sounds interesting too.
That's a documentary.
About
Kunyaza.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the whole women not being allowed to have pleasure. And I think it plays out in many, we're getting better. So I'm go guys and what you're learning and whoever's teaching and thinking, just critically thinking men. Mm-hmm. But there are many men who still have the, as long as I get mine, we're good. You know, if I've ejaculated, obviously I've done a good job and you're good. but the movie Boys Don't Cry. So I was watching the About, that movie, and one of the things they made, so it took, I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Uh-uh.
You should watch it. It's a good movie. It's an old movie. Not old. It's 1999, for God's sakes. It's not that old.
20 years.
God. It is. Yeah.
It's an antique.
I know, right? It's getting there. And I couldn't even totally tell you the storyline well, anyway. This character, the character in the movie who, as I recall it, is trans, or attempting to be trans back then. And he, in the film, he's having sex or pleasuring this woman. And they show her having a pleasurable time, enjoying the main character, pleasuring her. And in my recollection from this discussion, they had such a hard time getting that to be allowed in the movie, because there was so much of women actually enjoying orgasms is not okay. It's not okay for us to show. And they went, no, screw it. It's part of the character. The whole point, part of the point of this character is that he enjoyed giving her pleasure. That was fun for him. You know, I mean, we have those people in our world. We have the people who giving pleasure is just as much fun for them in many ways as getting pleasure. And God bless them, everyone. But I thought, I was really struck by that when I watched that, of just, you know, how much that was such a point. And it got me thinking about our culture and how we don't talk about women's pleasure. I had somebody say to me once, I was in one of my sex classes at school, and we were talking about masturbation for women. And it was mostly focused on women and discussing women masturbating. And a friend of mine was like, well, why are you having a massive masturbation discussion for men? And I thought about that, and I'm like, well, that's interesting. You know, never been a guy before, so okay. But listening to men talk, they're like, yeah, we really don't need that education. We're pretty good. We got this figured out. Our society allows us to figure ourselves out. And so by the time we get to having sex with a woman, we're pretty good. Where women having sex, not always the case, because it's been so bred into you that, oh my God, you know, horrible.
Yeah, well, I this is a great place for me to just bring up. Did you see my Facebook post about my gyno appointment yesterday?
Yes,
right.
Yes,
it's fascinating, because I posted it in a Women Helping Women entrepreneur page, because I'm like, you know, having comments to this scenario will help me decide if I can create some sort of coaching around this. So, you know, this is very relevant to my business. Please comment. Okay. So I went to the gynecologist, and when I was there, I'm a sexual authenticity coach. So of course it's the first appointment I've been to in a really long time. And I'm just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting. I had a male doctor. I didn't know if it would be a male or female. I just made the appointment, and a male doctor walks in, and we go through the motions of what I came in for, which was a routine exam and all that kind of stuff. And I waited for him to ask me, you know, am I enjoying like my sex, or am I having the ability to have pleasure, or do I have pain during sex, or do you know anything? Was he going to ask me anything about my pleasure at all? And he didn't. And so at the end, I told him that it was a test, and I was just kind of disappointed. And I'm laughing about it because I'm trying to lighten the mood and get him to talk to me. Mm-hmm. But basically, he said nobody wants to talk about their sex, you know, about their pleasure, about their anatomy, about are they able to achieve orgasm. He said most of the time it's not a physical problem. It's a mental or emotional or psychological, you know, something along those, mental illness or depression or just blocking it out, some sort of sexual trauma, whatever. And then he said, which I found very interesting, being a man gynecologist these days, that asking those kind of questions opens him up for harassment, which I found interesting. I can understand, however, if he were to have a nurse in the room with him while he asked certain questions, or I'm almost surprised that in this day and age that there isn't a second person in the room with a male gynecologist.
Yeah, there certainly are many times
where there is
tests,
right?
Yeah. Like I had a, oh God, I don't even remember what the test is called, but it's a, they had to use a camera to go inside my vagina.
Right.
And then they had to have, I mean, they basically said, we have a woman in the room because we have to have a woman in the room.
Yeah.
And I kind of had the same question you had of like, well, but the gynecologist, like, I know it's a little different, and it can get a little different when you're sticking a probe up there. Right. So I get that, but it is, it is an interesting thing.
Yeah. And so he said that when he feels prompted when he feels prompted, he will ask the question, is sex painful? And that's his opening question. Mm-hmm. And then he says from there, people will sometimes share. But he said that it's very frustrating that nobody will talk about their sexual pleasure. He said, there's things that I can help with. Mm-hmm. There's prescriptions. There's, you know, there's techniques, there's just part of education, there's, you know, people I could refer people to, you know, different stuff like that. And I just kind of left shaking my head, you know, and I was just kind of thinking, you know, are there ways that when you go in for a routine doctor's visit, aside from, you know, every time I go to my family doctor now, they ask if I feel safe in my home and mm-hmm. my relationships. And now I don't expect my family doctor to ask me every time I go in, am I having good orgasms? You know, but if I go to the gynecologist, I would think that somewhere in there could be a conversation where they could be fostering more curiosity, more education, more mental health pieces around sexuality.
Right. And the discussion to help normalize it for people, because he's not wrong.
Right.
The people are uncomfortable, but they're also uncomfortable because it's so ingrained in us not to be comfortable. Right. And then when you sense the doctor is uncomfortable, then it's like a whole new set of, oh God, you know, like I don't even have a place to have this communication. And, you know, how do I do this? How do I find somebody who is comfortable? And I think we need that, like, needs to be another rating on the rate your doctor kind of thing of, mm-hmm. are they comfortable discussing sex and sexuality? Because that is a big, and you know, if the answer is no, but then fine, who is, you
right.
know,
right.
because you kind of want somebody who has an open mind and who has some education or at least is open to other things rather than judgy.
And right? has at least a touch in the person's life, maybe once a year or twice mm-hmm. a year. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is that? So I had 26 entrepreneurial women respond to this post, which I also cross-shared in my personal page and on the Power Exchange. And I got different answers on those pages, which were helpful as well. But on this women's entrepreneurial page, which I put there specifically because I knew it would just be women that were answering, 26 people commented and only two out of 26 people would be okay with a physical health gynecology doctor, whether it was male or female, asking if they're okay in their sex life.
Wow.
Only
That's
two.
That's really sad.
I know.
Where do people go to get, I mean, I All that them, is so sad.
So many of them responded with, I'd tell him to mind his own business. I'd mm-hmm. find another doctor. That would make me so uncomfortable. You know, sexual pleasure isn't within the scope of the physical part of my anatomy, which
well,
is not
way,
true.
Right. Well, right. And the way you just worded it mm-hmm. would be a very non-invasive way of wording it. I can see that if the doctors definitely need language, because I think it could get creepy really quickly
right.
if they don't.
Right.
They have to learn to have some decorum and read their audience. But to be able to discuss it and have the doctors more comfortable with that discussion is, no, I think it's absolutely necessary. I absolutely, again, see why we have this podcast. We don't get to have these discussions in reality with people. And when you get around people who want to talk about it and they know you're safe to talk about, the sky's the limit in what gets talked about. And even that is sometimes a little iffy. It's like, okay, how far can I go with this? Or what question is okay? Or when's the judgment going to fall?
Yeah, really. I mean, because like one woman responded, if my sex life was something that needed help, my husband and I would talk about it.
Oh, wow. She has a very different marriage than most.
Well, yeah. And what about the people who aren't married?
Right. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Or don't have a partner that they can lean on and trust and work through those things.
Right.
Another person says, I would go to a sex therapist. How many women actually put sex therapy at the top of their list?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Or would pay extra or would pay out of their pocket because a copay is not going to cover it.
Nope.
Right. Mm-hmm. Another one says, not something a physical doctor would help with. You need more of a therapist, mindfulness, knowing yourself, having a safe emotional relationship. That's absolutely true. Some other people are saying it's all about insurance, of course. Mm-hmm. And people are saying that they find questions about their sexual pleasure offensive, too personal. It's not okay for a doctor to ask me during a visit, male or female. The only time it should be brought up is if I'm having a problem with it.
But then it's up to them
to have the power to bring mm-hmm. it up and not feel shame, guilt, or fear right. around the fact that they need help.
Right. And how many women, trying to
just
talk
go
to
through the motions, right?
Right. Well, exactly. And if you bring up, and this is, again, the doctors need training. If you bring up painful sex,
mm-hmm.
they don't have a lot of training to give you a lot of know-how of what to do. Like,
what exactly is painful sex? Because painful sex can be different to everybody.
Right. Where is it painful?
Where
is it a skin issue? Is it a pelvic floor issue? Is it a, and I understand, and this is something that our medical system needs to change. I understand that the doctors don't have the expertise and the knowledge and the education to send somebody on, but that's when we need the resource to send somebody on to say, great question. Let me examine you physically as best I can.
Right.
And then who else is who else do they have in their quiver to send you to?
Like when you have a broken bone and the doctor's office will take an x-ray and then send you off to the orthopedic, mm-hmm. That kind of a thing. And then, or if you go to the dentist and it's not something a dentist can fix, they send you to an endodontist or they send you to an ortho, braces doctor.
Right.
What are they? What's that word? Orthodontist.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How darn funny. Anyway, all of this being said, I'm just happy that we're on a course where we're empowering women to at least speak up for themselves,
yep.
to own their sex, and men too. This particular talk was more about the female, but if I can help teach people a variation of pleasure through kunyaza or the idea of squirting or maybe just being a woman who takes charge of, there's nothing wrong with taking the matter of pleasure into her own hands and making it pleasurable for herself and then taking care of the man afterwards. So, mm-hmm. there isn't this then that kind of scenario that has to happen. So I just really hope that that strikes a nerve with some people and that they'll tune in for my discussion, because it is going to be a discussion. I'm going to allow for questions to be asked and answer as many as I possibly can. Bring some people up if they want to talk on screen. I will happily bring them up. But for the most part, I'm going to be just kind of talking about the premise behind it and some ways that we can achieve it as women if we want to, and some of the reasons behind why it might not work. It's not 100% guaranteed in Western culture here because we are so pharmacologically dependent. If we're taking antihistamines all the time, mm-hmm. it reduces our production of certain fluids, and you have to be hydrated in order to be able to squirt, so there's certain things that kind of go hand in hand. So if you're taking a lot of medications to reduce inflammation, it's counterintuitive to the idea of being able to squirt because you won't have excess fluid in your body that would be held by your female prostate.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating. So, and I'll leave our listeners with a tip. Eat a lot of bananas and yellow fruits.
Oh, really?
Fruits and vegetables, yellow fruits and vegetables. Yes. Oh,
that's so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
The class is, I love stuff like that. That's so fascinating.
It's December 30th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Again, on my Facebook page, the secret group for women only. And it can be found through my Patricia Engelking page, or it can be found through the Power Exchange, or you're going to put the link on the Sex Matters Facebook Sex Matters page as well.
Yep. I'm going to do that even before this podcast goes out.
Perfect.
Say the word, what is it called in?
Kunyaza.
Kunyaza.
So Kunyaza. Yes. Kunyaza. Kunyaza.
We need more words like that, because I think sometimes squirting just sounds kind of gross. Like, that's not a word everybody loves. It's like the word moist. Some people just respond to the word moist. It's like, that just, ew. And we need more cool words.
When you say Kunyaza, moist, I think of brownies. I don't know. I don't think that.
I never had a
centerpiece.
Centerpiece
of the brownie, you know?
Yes. Oh, I don't know. You know, see now a nice moist brownie. I get along with that. There's a show, Dr. Horrible, and they talk at their head. There's a character called Moist in there.
Oh, it's funny.
It's a superhero, and his superhero ability is being slightly wet all the time, so he can really wet, you know, he can wet your envelopes and, you know, really well.
Everything,
but
yeah.
It was funny because that was the first I'd really been aware that people are like, moist, that's just an icky word. I never liked the word panties. That was kind of my word that I didn't like.
Oh, funny. So funny.
But moist brownies, moist paired with brownies is delightful.
Yeah, I think so too.
So. Squirting, nah.
Well, you know, Kunyaza is the male's job. That's the technique.
Okay, that's the technique. So
yeah.
Okay.
And ejaculating is really what it comes down to. That's not really a pretty word either, but.
No, it sounds very.
I like to think of squirting as the fountain of youth. Like to me, it's like when you can have an orgasm that overwhelms your body to the point where you lose bodily function. Cause that's really kind of what it is. It's like your body's just doing things and you have no control over it. It taps into that really young, playful, curious energy that can just gives you that blissful feeling afterward from orgasm that sits with you for hours, you know. But fountain of youth, again, that's a mouthful. I don't know that that's really a good one either. Maybe some of the people that come to the discussion group could come up with some suggestions.
I like it.
Other words, and we could just make it a trend. We can hashtag it and make it a household word. So
I like it.
Yeah.
Patricia had to run off to an appointment. As is common, we get talking and then time flies faster than we expect. So she had to go. I wanted to remind you, of course, we talked about the event is happening on Facebook Live Monday, December 30th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. You need to be a part of the secret group for women, !! Or as I would have said when I was 5, excitement mark. Could not remember the word !! So please, ladies, if you are interested in this topic, check out the Facebook Live event. If you are coming to this after that event has happened and you're interested, join the group and the posting should be there with that discussion, but it's always nice to be on live while it's happening. So try to make it if you can. Thanks so much for listening. Definitely visit the website if you have a question to submit for us to talk about on the podcast at sexmatterspodcast.com. Maybe it's a general question. Maybe it's a news story topic, something you'd like to hear us chat about. You do not have to share who you are. You can remain anonymous. Give us a name that you would like to be called. An email address is great if we have follow-up questions, but not necessary. If you enjoy the podcast, drop a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast or on our website. We'd love to hear your feedback. If you would like to learn more about Patricia, the work she does, the classes that she teaches, working with her individually, you can check her out at thepowerexchange.co. That's thepowerexchange.co. You can also find her on Facebook as well. Her book is called Crossing the River Called Suffering. You can connect to it through the website. That will get you right to Amazon. And I totally invite you to connect with me and my weekly podcast at wellnessrenpodcast.com. That's the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. So it's wellnessren, R-E-N, podcast.com. Or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if I'm not there, definitely drop me a line and let me know. Love to see you on my Facebook page as well at Wellness Renaissance. Take care. We'll see you next week. And I hope to see some of you on the class on Monday night. Have a good one and Happy New Year.